1330 WEBY, Northwest Florida's Talk Radio. This is Your Turn, a live call-in show featuring spirited discussion and debate about issues that matter to the community. Your Turn is sponsored by People's First Community Bank, the best bank in the neighborhood. Stay with us to hear what Northwest Florida thinks. Better yet, call in at 623-1330 and tell us what you think. It's your turn here on 1330 WEBY, Northwest Florida's Talk Radio. Now, here's the host of Your Turn.
Thanks so much for tuning in. If you've just tuned in, my name's Renee Giacchino. I'm corporate counsel for the Center for Individual Freedom. To learn more about my organization, please visit our website at www.cfif.org. On that website, I'd like to encourage you to visit a section. It's called Courtroom Jesters. It's something that I write every week for the website, and it highlights some of the ridiculous and outrageous lawsuits that are happening right here in our country. If you happen to come across any, you hear about any, they obviously, I have to have some support for it. Most of the time, it maybe comes from a newspaper article, or if it happens to be a case that you individually have worked on and you can provide me with some backup documentation, I'd love to feature your case on our website at www.cfif.org, and that's in the Courtroom Jester section. Joining me now on the program is Julia Reed. She's the author of a brand new book that's out. It's called The House on First Street, My New Orleans Story. She's also the author of a book called Queen of the Turtle Derby, and many folks may be familiar with her work as a contributing editor at Vogue and Newsweek. Julia grew up in Greenville, Mississippi, and has called New Orleans home for the last several years. Julia, thanks so much for joining us on the program.
Thanks so much for having me.
What a wonderful book, The House on First Street. And it's interesting because before I even received your copy of the book that was sent to me, I read the review, and I thought they were a little in the Wall Street Journal, and it opens up by saying the peculiarly bland title of The House on First Street belies the sass and grit and peacocky local color that Julia Reed brings, and so on and so forth. And I thought, boy, that's a little bit harsh, as they said. But I do have to say, I might agree. This book is a lot more than the title, The House on First Street.
Well, thank you. Yeah, no, I took that as a compliment. Well, The House on First Street is kind of a metaphor, since we were in the middle of a house renovation when the hurricane hit. The book is a lot of things. One is, I'd like to joke that it's a coming-of-age story, even though I'm, you know, middle-aged at this point. But, you know, it was the first house I'd ever bought, and I finally decided to settle in a community for good instead of sort of, I've been living, going back and forth between New York and New Orleans, living like a vagabond. So the house was, you know, a big symbol of, like, you know, a sort of decision I'd made in my life. It was a device to bring in lots of characters, you know, but it is about a lot more than the house.
Well, it is, and I tried to, I always try to categorize a book because when I want to describe it to someone who might want to read it, and at first I thought, okay, well, when you first start out the book and it's the story of a woman with her southern roots who, you know, spends a great deal of time in the Northeast, up in New York, and then finally comes back home, almost that sort of Sweet Home Alabama-esque book, and I wanted to put it in, right, I wanted to put it in the Southern romance genre, but as I read and the story continued on, it really is a history book. Is that fair?
Well, yeah, I mean, not entirely, because I'm hardly a historian, but I do, as a reader, I like to get sort of, you know, what I hope is like painless information, you know what I mean? It's like, so I tried to do that with this book. So as you're reading along in this narrative story about, you know, how I got to New Orleans in the first place, and then sort of what happened when we bought this house, and then what happened when Katrina hit, I also thought I should put New Orleans itself into some kind of context. I mean, especially since Katrina just happened and so much negative stuff was, you know, on writ large on the TV screens across the country for so long, you know, I sort of, there needed to be some kind of context about why people in New Orleans are where they are, why our government's so corrupt, why a lot of things. So I did want to put all of that in context because I didn't want it to be so much a Katrina book as a book about New Orleans, you know, before, during, and after.
Well, it's interesting because most of the folks here in the listening audience were impacted either intimately or remotely by Hurricane Ivan. I mean, that came ashore just a year before, a year and a couple of months before Katrina hit you, and then we got a second whipping with Dennis the following July. And so I think a lot of people, myself included, could absolutely relate with what you go through in the house on First Street. And I talk most particularly about your story about going back to New Orleans after, and we had similar experiences here. I mean, I'm from the north, and a lot of people up north said to me, well, you're surely not going to stay there, are you? But it as beautiful as this area is, it really was the beauty of the people that kept us here and keeps us here now, even with the threat of hurricanes. And I think you make that point very well in this book, the House on First Street, that it's the people of New Orleans, it's the culture of New Orleans that keeps people there and will bring people back.
You know, absolutely. I mean, what you all have been through, I mean, I say in the book in the beginning, it's sort of like when we, you know, when Ivan came, we dodged that bullet. We dodged so many bullets that you guys caught. And the odds, there was no, I remember thinking that summer, the odds are so against us, you know, and we can't keep dodging this bullet. And yeah, I mean, I got a lot of the same thing you're talking about, especially since I had just had sold my co-op in New York and decided, okay, I'm, you know, I'd just gotten married and bought a house. I'm like, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it full throttle. I mean, it's time for me to grow up and settle down, you know, all that stuff. So, you know, we had barely moved into the house, and the house was still very much a construction site when we did move into it. And we'd been in for 3 weeks before the storm hit. So everybody said, well, are you just going to pack up and go back to New York? And it was the furthest thing from my mind, because all the reasons that I'd chosen to commit to New Orleans in the first place, we're still here, all the things, the good things about the city that has seduced me. And now, post-Katrina, there was a chance actually to really improve on the city in ways that I think would have been almost impossible pre-storm. I mean, we had a different situation than you guys did. I mean, so much was rotten at the core of New Orleans, the school system, the level of corruption in all levels of government. We now have a chance to reinvent that, and people got a real wake-up call. I mean, you know, people know now that you really do get the government you deserve. You got to ride herd on these people and hold them accountable. You're not going to have, an economy if you don't have a place where new businesses and people working for those new businesses can educate their children. I mean, on and on and on. So to me, New Orleans is a much more optimistic place. And as a person who'd been in love with it and a part-time resident for more than a decade, you know, it turned out to be the perfect place to decide to put down roots, because there's so much to get your hands dirty and do.
Julia, did the restaurant industry save New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina?
That is a good question, and I've said exactly that. And people look at me like, you know, especially Yankees look at me like I've lost my mind. But it absolutely did. The chefs came back early. I mean, some of the chefs like Paul Prudhomme and John Besh at August, came back in and were feeding the masses just, you know, with pots of red beans and rice, on gas cookers. One of the characters in my book is a chef named Donald Link, and he owns Herb Saint and Cochon, which are two of the city's best restaurants. And he was the first. He lost his house. He had to tell his little girl that, you know, their cat had drowned. I mean, all the horrible things that everybody knows about after a hurricane. And despite all of that, you know, not having a place to sleep, he's sleeping on his brother-in-law's floor, I think, and, you know, he was the first restaurateur to reopen. And when people saw that, it's like, okay, if this guy can dig deep within himself and come back, and he, you know, this is not Emeril or some big corporation. This is a small business owner, you know. So if he can do this, then by God, we can. That was one part of it, you know, that being that part of the inspiration. But also, when you read about restaurants like Upperline, whose owner is also in my book, you know, people know about Upperline all over the country, and tourists come in, and that's one of the first places they like to go. But for a lot of people in New Orleans, it's their neighborhood joint. So that when Joanne is in there scrubbing her floors and getting rid of all the mold and doing all this stuff so that she can reopen, Joanne Clevenger.
Yeah, pulling up carpet and...
Yeah, you know, she's on her hands and knees, and Joanne is not a spring chicken. You know, doing this, it's a real symbol for those people in the neighborhood. It's like, okay, you know, if I can go around the corner and still get this incredibly delicious food that I got pre-Katrina, then that's one part of normalcy. Plus, every reopening was like a small celebration. It was a celebration of somebody back, still alive, hard at it, willing to reinvest in this city that at that point had maybe 10,000 people, which was it was completely blighted, you know. So the fact that those guys came back and we all went, you know, I mean, we all gained what I call the Katrina 15.
I love that saying, and I suffer the same. I've got Ivan 15, maybe 20.
Well, you know, first you're so stressed out watching TV while it's going on, you're evacuated, you're eating and drinking constantly in front of the TV, and then when we came back, it was like our civic duty to celebrate each reopening of a restaurant. But it was also a place where people were finally seeing each other for the first time. So it was a real, you know, it was like each restaurant was like a community center. Like, how did you do? You know, did so-and-so come back? Is so-and-so okay? Do you have a roof? You know, it was a place where you finally could get information because nobody's cell phones were working. You know, the restaurants were really it.
The book is called The House on First Street, My New Orleans Story. We're talking with Julia Reed, who's the author of the book. And let me suggest that anyone who's from New Orleans or been to New Orleans, I mean, you'll want to read it because you're going to know the names and the places. But for someone like me, I've been to New Orleans numerous times, but I've never really had an insider's perspective on New Orleans. Now when I go, I'm going to take your book with me, Julia, because I think it's kind of like, who is it that does the eating guides? Not Forbes, but
Zagat. Yeah,
Zagat. It's almost a Zagat's who's who and where's where on where to eat in New Orleans. It's a wonderful book for that purpose. I want to go to something you talk about midway through the book when you're a little bit nervous to go back and you've got a physician friend who's there and he's encouraging you. You don't need to worry about malaria. You don't need to worry about that. And you say there has never been a recorded snake bite after a hurricane in the history of the United States. Can I tell you that my husband killed a 6-foot rattlesnake in our family room?
Oh my God! Well, I got to tell Bob.
2 days. Now again, he was not
being recorded by killing the snake.
Well, he was not bit by it, but we do have it on videotape. Our neighbor happened to be there with a videotape, and he first called the police, and of course that was a joke. And then they said, "We'll call animal control and forget it." No one even. This was 2 days after Ivan, and the thing had washed into the house and had curled up in the drywall, and he was peeling back the drywall, and there it was.
Oh, my God. Well, I've got to tell Brobson, my buddy, the former public health officer in New Orleans.
Right.
But what he was mostly reacting to was the fact that all these, like, sort of people who'd never been to New Orleans, all these public health officials were going on TV going, don't go back. There's too much of a threat of typhoid and cholera and all this stuff. And
E. coli.
He was so hopping mad.
Right.
Yeah, E. coli. But as I said, your husband kept there from being a recorded snake bite.
he did. He did. Julia, we've got some calls. I'm going to take a quick break, then we'll take that call as soon as we come back. Is that okay?
Yeah, sure.
All right, we'll be right back after this short break. We're talking with Julia Reed. She is a contributing editor at Vogue and Newsweek and the author of an essay collection called Queen of the Turtle Derby. And we're talking about her latest book. It's called The House on First Street, My New Orleans Story. Beautiful, beautiful book. You'll definitely want to pick up copies and give them out to all your friends, particularly as the anniversary of Katrina and even Ivan approaches. It'll remind us a lot of what we have to be thankful for. We'll be right back after this short break.
Now, back to your turn on 1330 WEBY, Northwest Florida's Talk Radio. The phone lines are open, so call in and join the conversation at 623-1330.
We are talking with Julia Reed about her new book. It's called The House on First Street, My New Orleans Story. And it's a story leading up to the days a couple years before Hurricane Katrina hit New Orleans and then the days following and how people survived in the aftermath of what for many will be the most traumatic event in their lives. Go ahead, Mark. It's your turn. You have a question for Julia?
Yes. First of all, I'd like to commend her for her staying ability, her fortitude to come back like that.
Right.
But I have two questions. First of all, do you blame any level of government for the aftermath? And secondly, it seems to me that with much of New Orleans below sea level, and the fact that this another hurricane will hit there again someday, does it make sense to build back there?
Well, let me take your first question first. You can blame every level of government from the top down. Pretty much nobody did their job from FEMA to the. I mean, it's astonishing to me that in a community where, you know, such a huge percentage of people do not have automobiles, do not own automobiles, and that's public record, that there was not an evacuation plan other than telling people to go, quote unquote, as a last resort to the Superdome. I mean, you know, you'd think we might have a little bus action going on. I mean, you know, Amtrak offered their train, but nobody listened to them. But that's a sort of cosmetic looking thing. The roots of New Orleans problems were so much, we've had a corrupt and ineffective government for so long. And the hurricane certainly exposed that. And as I was saying earlier on the show, you know, we have a chance now to really recreate a city that's much more efficient and responsible. And I think people realize, like I said, that you get the government you deserve, and you've got to hold people accountable. And, you know, you're not going to take their word for whether the levees are strong or we've got an evacuation plan that works or any of those things. So I think that, you know, it comes, you know, there's, you can hope that FEMA does their job, but you need to have a functioning city in the first place. And we're well on our way, believe it or not, toward getting that. The second thing is, look, I was born in a place that's below sea level in the Mississippi Delta, and then I lived in Washington, D.C. for a long time, which is basically a swamp. There are all kinds of places that doesn't make any sense at all for people to live. You know, half the folks on the beach in your state, in Florida, are at great risk. You know, I think that once people decide someplace is home and it's been home for hundreds of years, it's hard to say, all right, we're going to return this whole neighborhood to the wetlands, or we're going to pave over this sucker. So I think we're going to have a slightly smaller footprint and maybe restore some of the lowest lying areas to wetlands. But I think, you know, I think you're going to, people are already rebuilding here and, doing it with gusto. So I don't think it's realistic to say, look, this doesn't make any sense. We're not going to rebuild here.
All right, Mark, thanks so much. We appreciate the call. We've got another call. Go ahead, Steve. It's your turn.
Thanks, Mark.
Hi, Julia. Hi. This is Steve. I'm from the Delta myself, Leland. You probably know that town.
7 miles. Yeah, Leland is actually in the book because we had many evacuation meals at Lilo's.
Oh, that's my last name, believe it or not.
I do believe it.
I had a restaurant in Pensacola here for 11 years.
A wonderful restaurant.
I moved out in 87, moved to New York also, and then ended up on the coast and got hit with several hurricanes. Ivan was one of them. But my question to you is, what prompted you to write a book? I mean, are you a writer or because...
I am a writer. I've made a living as a writer my entire adult life. I write for magazines. I'm a contributing editor right now at Newsweek, and I wrote a lot for Vogue and for Newsweek after the storm. I worked at Vogue for 20 years. And this is my second book. So, and in fact, I have another one out simultaneously because I'm a food writer on the side, which is a nice fit if you live in New Orleans. So, you know, when something happens to you like this, and in fact, I was thinking about maybe writing a sort of memoir slash history of the Mississippi Delta, but, my current home suddenly, seems so much more interesting than my former home, and it's a way to come to terms with what's happening to you.
Do you have a website or anything?
I don't have a website because I'm probably like the most prehistoric, you know, technologically person on the planet, but, I am a contributor to a website where there are lots of different, it's called wowowow.com, www.wowow.com, and it's a website that women journalists contribute to, everybody from Whoopi Goldberg to me to Leslie Stahl to Miss Manners in the Washington Post. So, and there are lots of us, and it's a fun website, and I've got, a lot of stuff up on it.
That's wowowow.com.
W-O-W-O-W.com?
W-O-W-O-W.com is ridiculously long, but anyway.
And that's how to get in touch with you. Okay.
Bring Lilo's back.
Yeah, Lilo, listen, I'm so delighted. Lilo saved us during the evacuation. That was part of my Katrina 15, eating that delicious eggplant parmesan, all those pizzas.
Well, I appreciate it. And the tradition goes on there, and maybe we're trying to get it back here one day.
Well,
great.
Thank you. Thanks so much,
Good
Steve.
Good luck to you.
We appreciate the call. Thank you very much, Steve. You mentioned that you're a dinosaur when it comes to technology, and I don't want to give away the end of your book because it about made me cry because, you know, I aspire someday to write and tell a story. I write a column for our local newspaper, and I do it for fun more than anything because it really can be, you know, a great outlet for people.
Absolutely.
I don't want to give away the end of your book, but How did you get over that?
You know, I mean, people ask this question to every signing, so that those people who hadn't written, though. I also, one of the many things our idiot contractor did not do was install the burglar alarm. And once she disappeared and I had to become my own contractor, you know, we needed things like a new roof all of a sudden, so the alarm was not high on my list. And then about 2 weeks before the book was due, or not even, but a week before the book was due, our house was broken into and my laptop was stolen, which I am sitting here a lesson in the importance of backing up every single word you write. But so I'd saved only one chapter and some other, and a few other odds and ends, so I had to rewrite the book basically. But the good thing about doing that in a city like New Orleans, all my friends who are writers said, oh my God, I would have hurled myself off the balcony or whatever. You really wouldn't. And the thing about being in New Orleans is that whatever happened to you, however bad that was, and I, you know, believe me, I took a few deep breaths, it is not nearly as bad as what could have happened to you. I mean, you know, Nobody I know died, for example. You know, so it's
all perspective.
Perspective. Yep.
Yep. Yep. You're absolutely right. It's all a matter of perspective.
And you guys know that from where you're sitting. I mean, you know, we all learn how to find silver linings where you can, and keep your own troubles well in hand. So, I mean, there's it's hard to say there are good things that come from hurricanes, but there are. I mean, you've got to just be able to hunt for them. And like I said, the sort of renewal of New Orleans is one of those things, despite the tragic nature of what happened to so many people.
Well, it certainly is a wake-up call. You learn who your friends are and who your friends are and who your neighbors are. People learned a lot more about their neighbors. Well, Julia,
absolutely.
Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for writing this book. I think as the anniversary of Ivan, we just had the anniversary of Dennis, and then the anniversary of Katrina all approach us rather rapidly. This is a wonderful opportunity for us to be thankful for what we have, for what we didn't suffer, and I know many did suffer a lot, but you know, we have a lot to be thankful to, and as you read Julia's book, I think that you'll find your places where you can be thankful. The book is called The House on First Street, My New Orleans Story by Julia Reed. Please pick up a copy. Julia, thanks again for joining us, and we'll have to visit you at wowowow.com as well.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate being on the show.
You coming in, Aria, to do a book signing anytime soon?
I'll probably, you know, there's a great guy in Seaside, Florida that has Sundog Books, which is one of my favorite bookstores, and so I'll probably head there in August sometime soon.
All right, well, let me know.
I'm coming to Fairhope, Alabama on August 7th, I think.
Okay, we could spit in either direction and catch you then, and hopefully a lot of folks will. If you'll let me know, I'll be sure and pass the word on to the listeners. I know folks in Destin can hear us, and at Seaside, and I know folks in Fairhope can as well. So they'll pick up your book, hopefully, maybe even read it before they see you and get their autographed copy. It's called
The
House on First Street.
I'll give you a shout, Renee. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you, Julia. We appreciate it. The House on First Street by Julia Reed. It's her New Orleans story. Pick up a copy. You won't regret it. We'll be right back after this short break.